The next matter on for oral argument this morning is Osman v. Tabibu. I'm hoping that you'll correct my pronunciation if I've mispronounced either name. Looks like we have more counsel coming in. Counsel Leacher, you'll have 15 minutes for your oral argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel if you'd like to use that for rebuttal. Please keep track of those timing restrictions. They're indicated. There's a light in the lectern. When it's yellow, that means you've got 5 minutes left. Red means you're out of time. You can raise or lower the lectern to match your height for your convenience. And each of you will have 15 minutes, but you'll have an additional 5 minutes, appellant's counsel, if you'd like to use it. And we ask that you state your name as you commence each leg of your argument. Yes, sir.
Your Honor, is it permissible if Mr. Osman joins me today?
Only if he's a member of the bar.
Oh, there he is.
Thank you.
That's what I wanted to ask.
Thank you for asking. If you're ready to proceed, counsel for appellant, you may do so.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, counsel, Mark Manderfeld, appearing on behalf of the appellant in this case, Jerome Tibibu. So, Your Honor, you were pretty close.
Pretty close, not quite. My apologies.
This is a case about a lease that was first signed for an auto repair shop in Minneapolis in the year of 2013, almost 12 years ago. The lease was drafted by the landlord respondent, and it had an initial 5-year term. The center of the controversy in this case is what I will refer to as the extension clause, which appears on the first page of the agreement and reads briefly, after the term of 5 years, the tenant will have the first right to either extend or purchase the premises in as-is condition as of the last day of their lease.
Can I ask you a big picture question about the case? I just want to understand the facts. At the time that the parties were disputing about this non-renewal, they were already 1 year into whatever extension occurred in 2023.
That is correct.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
So we're not here, and the district court wasn't there addressing the decision that was made in 2023. Whatever happened in 2023. Am I correct or not?
The court made no finding as to whether there was an agreement to again extend the lease for another 5-year term through 2028.
Is it an oversimplification to say that if there was an agreement in 2023 to extend the lease for 5 years, then they're in the middle of that lease extension right now?
That is our position.
And if there was no agreement in 2023, then we're on a month-to-month lease beginning in that the switch from the 2018 5-year extension to whatever happened in 2023. Is that accurate too?
Perhaps. We'd refer the court to the Keene case, in which the court looked at the conduct of the parties and said that in a case where there is a lease with a right of extension and the tenant stays on and the landlord doesn't complain, that there is an extension of the lease. So we believe that there are two ways.
Well, an extension of the lease for a certain period.
For another term.
Well, okay. Doesn't the statute indicate that if there's an extension of the lease, or if there's a holdover, what you have is a period of extension that covers no more than the payment period, which in this case would be every month?
You're referring to the urban holdover real estate statute, which is a change of the common law. So it would be our position that when a case involves a 5-year term and there has been one or more 5-year extensions, that would not be governed by that statute. that the course of dealing of the parties would infer this extension.
Is there some language in the statute that we would look to support that theory?
I cannot cite you to one, no.
Is there any case law that would support that theory?
I cannot cite it to that either.
If we're looking just at the plain language of the statute, you'd be in a month-to-month if the hypothetical or the assumption I've presented.
As I understand the statute, which was not anything that has been briefed in this case, yes.
All right, thank you.
Our position is that the parties verbally agree on two occasions to extend the lease for two additional five-year terms, that those verbal agreements were fully effective, and that since they are in the middle of a term, as Judge has pointed out, the purported termination by the document served in March of 2024, which doesn't refer to a month-to-month tenancy, but rather refers to a lease, notice of non-renewal of lease.
Counsel, I have a question about the term that you just read, just before Judge Ross started asking questions, in paragraph 2 of the commercial lease, and I'll reread it. After the term of 5 years, the tenants will have the first right to extend or purchase the premises in an as-is condition as the last day of their lease. It says after the term of 5 years, the tenant will have. Is there any reason why we can't read that to mean that this lease only allowed for one extension on its original terms? I guess I'm focused on the use of the article the after the term of 5 years.
Well, it doesn't say one.
It doesn't say more than one.
It doesn't
either.
Say one, and it doesn't say more than one. So
how do we interpret the use of the article the?
We interpret it as being open-ended for this reason, that the conduct of the parties shows it. And there is a second reason, and that is that the clause also refers to a right of first purchase. The right of first purchase could happen at any time, but the condition of the property would be as of the last day of their lease. It doesn't say of the term. It says of the lease, which we believe allows this extension term to provide for more than one.
Well, then how many does it provide for? Because I think that's where, I have some concerns about if we need to read this as a reasonable person or if we need to look at this and interpret it by its plain language. How do we get to where you want us to be without then needing to read it as if this could be renewed in perpetuity? Just continues on and on forever, every 5 years.
Well, I would say respectfully that is not an issue before the court, that the issue before the court is whether or not the parties have in fact agreed to two additional extensions, and that the hypothetical of this happening forever is not within the scope of appeal, nor was it within the scope of the eviction proceedings, which is limited to who has current right to possess the property.
But you're making the argument that we should read that as if it allows the second extension. So there's the initial term of 2013 to 2018. There's the extension from 2018 to 2023. And then what in this lease allows us to go where you want us to go, which is to say it was allowed for a second time?
The agreement and the conduct of the parties provided for the second extension.
Okay.
Whether there is another case in 2028 over whether there is a third extension right is hypothetical. We're not claiming that. We're not claiming that it goes forever. We're claiming that it was renewed twice.
How many times are you claiming it goes for?
We're claiming that it has been renewed twice or extended twice.
And how many times would you say it can be renewed?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
In the district court's order, it had in a paragraph 5, this is its July 30th order, it described the rent amounts that were due for the specific periods of time, and it sets out four different amounts. The first is the $2,250. It says that was only due in 2013 and 2014. That's the amount that I see in the commercial lease document. Then it says from January 2015 to September 2018, that increased to 2,500. Why did that increase, and was that increase reflected in the written agreement?
It was not. There are no written agreements to either extend the lease or to increase the rent. The first rent increase came when, as the testimony of the parties indicated, landlord came to the tenants and said, I have been ill, I need more money, can you increase the rent? And they said yes, showing that they were both very nice people and very cooperative tenants. The others were also verbal agreements.
Okay.
That were made at different times, as shown in the record.
And so why wouldn't we interpret those increases as outside of the scope of paragraph, the other paragraph that's argued in this case, which is 20 sub 8, which is the amendment paragraph that says that any amendments, modifications, et cetera, have to be in writing?
That is one of the key arguments in our case. The district court found that those oral agreements were enforceable and the oral agreements to extend the lease were not enforceable. Our position is that they can't have it both ways. They both need to be enforceable, in which case the rent stays paid, the lease stays extended, or they're both unenforceable because it's the same situation.
Perhaps this isn't ripe for debate, even though it's in the briefing, at least it's sort of brushed over in the briefing. If you're correct that there needs to be a finding as to whether or not there was some type of an agreement in 2023, it seems to me the next question is going to be, let's say there was an agreement. Was it an agreement that is effectively a renewal? Or is an agreement that is effectively an extension? You understand the difference in the case law.
I do, and it's a very important distinction. When it's extended, you still have a lease that relates back to the initial date of the lease. When you have a renewal, you have a new lease.
But when you have a renewal, you need
a new agreement.
A new agreement in writing.
Yes, under the statute of fraud.
And maybe you're right, and it's not before us yet, because the district court hasn't made a determination. If you're right, I'm not saying you are, but if you're right that the district court needed to make that decision as to whether there was an agreement in 2023 of something, either an extension or renewal, whatever you want to call it, it seems as if that next question has to be resolved then. If it turns out that there was an agreement to extend, but there was a change in the terms that you've got to determine what it is you're agreeing to, how long is this extension going to be? I notice in paragraph 2, it says you have a right to extend, but many of the contracts say you have a right to extend for the same period of time, or you have the right to extend for 1 year. Here, there's no indication as to how long the extension is going to be, and there's already been a change in the rent. So it might feel, and maybe you can let me know if you think I'm wrong about this, it might feel like you're renegotiating the terms when you're executing this extension or making an agreement to extend. You've got to determine how much and how long. And am I right about that? And if I am, why isn't that a renewal?
I would respectfully disagree. I would say that the extension clause is very broadly written. It provides no procedure for how an extension is to be executed.
I'm not talking about the procedure. I'm talking about the length of the term.
I understand, but I'm saying that allows for the extension. And the testimony of the appellant is that in August of 2023, he and the respondent met and they agreed to another term.
Right, of 5 years.
Yes.
Is there anything in the language in paragraph 2 that would prevent your client from saying, yes, I would like an extension for 1 year, not for 5 years? Could your client have said that and had the authority to do so under this provision?
They could have discussed it. They could have discussed it.
No, my question isn't whether they could discuss it, but would your client, as a matter of, have the right? It says tenant will have the first right to either extend or to purchase. It doesn't say how long the extension is. As you read that contract provision, which is open-ended as to the extension period, is it, would you agree that your client would have then the right to say, I would like to extend it, but not for a full, for a full 5 years. I'm insisting on a 1 year extension or a 2 year extension.
I believe that that proposition is within the broad scope that is created by the extension provision.
Could your client say, I want to extend it for 6 years?
I don't think so.
Why?
I don't think so, because the term was for 5 years, and the agreement had been for 5 years, and that this was the course of dealing of the parties.
I'm getting my concern, and again, maybe it's premature if you're right on the issues, that at some point someone's going to have to ask the question of whether this is just too vague. And if it's vague, and then your client could have asserted a right to extend, and it's unclear about how long that extension would be, and the parties would have to reach an agreement about it, and the parties have to reach an agreement about how much the rent's going to be, it feels like you're creating a new, you're renewing the contract. You're creating something new for which the statute of frauds might actually come into play at that point.
Well, my only response to that would be that those are theoreticals, that it's not before the court, and what is before the court is that the parties did agree twice to extend for 5 more years. And whatever happens after that, I agree, is up in the air, because the lease drafted by the landlord is rather brief in this provision.
Thank you. You will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. Ronald J. Walsh appearing on behalf of respondent Ronak Osman. I submit the district court at the referee level, and the district court review level was exactly right, and I think zeroed in on the issues. I think this court has already kind of touched on the fact that that right to extend is vague.
Well, did the district court and the referee hone in on the issues?
I would submit yes, Your Honor. I believe that the Honorable Referee Reed identified it and said that even if the facts were such as appellant alleges, that there was verbal agreements, that the provision under 20, paragraph 20, sub 8, requires it to be in writing. They found that it was vague.
Was that consistent with the law? I mean, that the court seems to be taking the view that an extension is an amendment.
I think it said just that. Yes.
Yes. I've never seen a case where there's a provision in a lease that allows for the tenant to extend as a matter of right, where the extension is then treated as an amendment. Why is it an amendment if a tenant exercises a right? Why isn't it just a tenant exercising the right? How is the contract amended by the exercise of a right that's included in the written document?
I would submit that in this case, it becomes, it kind of morphs over into an amendment, if you will, because of the vagueness of that term. As the court has already identified.
That's not what the court, that's interesting. Yeah. That's not what the court said. The court just said, hey, you've got this provision that says you have to have amendments in writing. And it's an extension, therefore it's an amendment. Does that make sense to you?
It makes sense to the...
Is that correct as a matter of law?
As a matter of law, I think the court is correct in finding that, because the terms of what that extension would be were not set out in the document. The case law that counsel has pointed to, I believe even the Medicare case, talks about the fact that typically an extension would say it would contain the terms, how long,
well,
how many
the
times.
The court said this was a finding. There was credible testimony from both parties that an oral agreement extended the lease term for an additional 5 years. That was a holding of the court, that that happened. So the parties agreed to extend this. Whether it was vague or not in the contract, the parties agreed to extend it. And so if the parties agreed to extend it, why is it an amendment? How is it an amendment if the parties agreed to extend it based upon the language as the parties allegedly understood it? And I know there's a factual dispute about that.
I would submit that the only agreement these people really came to was that you can stay and pay. If you pay, you can stay here. They treated it.
I understand that's what you're saying.
Yes, sir.
And I'm not, we're not a fact-finding court.
Yes.
The fact-finding court said the parties reached an agreement to extend for 5 years and that there was an increase in the rent at some point. And so we have the lease, we have the lease length as agreed to in the extension, and we have the amount that was agreed to. So help me with the amendment part.
I think it be, in this case, it becomes an amendment. At least, as I interpret what the court reasoned and analyzed, was that because of the lack of clarity on what that extension would look like, they could agree or they could conduct themselves any way they want, certainly at the risk of the tenant. But I'm submitting to the court that it turned out to be 5 years, way more than 5 years, up to 2023, on a month-to-month basis. These, as I believe referee wrote in his or his finding, he said, even if they did that, even if they verbally agreed on some things, if it relate to the extent it relates back to the original contract, original lease, it's got to be in writing to be enforceable by both sides against each other.
Because it's an amendment.
By definition, this lease has to be amended at the end of the initial term. You have to have something in writing to acknowledge what.
Do you understand? There's a difference between having a requirement to have it in writing. That's one issue. There's a different issue as to whether what you're doing is an amendment. Those are different questions.
Yes, sir. If this was an amendment, then yes, it has to be in writing.
Right. The court said because paragraph 28 of the lease prohibits oral amendments, the court essentially voided the agreement that the court said the parties had engaged in. You know there's case law that says if there's an extension, there's no statute of frauds issue. You can have an extension of a lease without the statute of frauds implicating it. You cannot have a renewal without the statute of frauds being implicated. Now, I have to tell you, reading the case law, I have a hard time understanding what the court means by a distinction between a renewal and an extension, but there has been that in Minnesota, that distinction made. And do you agree that the case law says you have to have a writing for a renewal? You don't have to have a writing for an extension.
Yes. Yes, I would agree with that. And I think those cases that hold that analysis are dealing with leases where the terms of that extension are clearly set forth. Tenant simply must give a notice. There's some triggering event to put in the extension terms into play, an option, if you will. As the court already indicated, you know, what if the tenant only wanted 1 year? Okay, the argument that I think I'm hearing both, or the argument from appellant as well as the questions from the court, seem to appellant would have the court believe it's automatically 5 years. Doesn't say that. The tenant could have said I needed, you know, only 1 year term, 2 year term. In this particular case, I think it is consistent with the prior analysis of this court that while the court's proposition is correct, if it's just an extension, it does not have to be in writing. Okay? But because just because it says extension in there doesn't mean that they can immediately just say, well, that's the same as a repeat of the term. Okay.
So the district court, neither the referee nor the district court, actually made a legal determination as to whether this thing that the referee said happened, an agreement to extend, never actually analyzed whether this was an extension or a renewal.
I don't think he used those words, Your Honor. I think he kind of did. I think it's implicit in the language that referee used, as well as District Court Judge Benson. I think they almost gave it to them and said, well, maybe we're not even going to, you know, drill down into the credibility of what and what those terms would have been. You guys.
Well, the Supreme Court seems to put a premium on drilling down on what happens when parties in a lease go forward, either with a renewal or an extension. So how was it not an abuse of discretion for the district court not to determine whether this agreement to extend was an extension or a renewal? Put differently, how can we decide this case without knowing one way or the other what it is as a matter of law?
I would submit to you that I believe the district court and referee Reed, I don't want to say they skipped over that, Your Honor, but I think they just said, even if, because of the vagueness under which and strict extension of this lease could be found, was absent from the document itself. In fact, the very vagueness of it is what makes it require a written agreement. Okay.
Let me put it differently.
Certainly.
We're not here fighting over the 2023 lease, whatever it is. The parties had an agreement. So whatever happened, the parties have been living under that since 2023. So what matters now is what happens in 2024 when we have this notice of non-renewal. So if, correct me if you think I'm wrong about this, maybe I'm oversimplifying it, and your job is to disabuse me if I'm wrong, okay?
Thank you for the permission.
But if, you don't need my permission. If the parties agreed to an extension, to extend the lease, if whatever they did is, as a matter of law, an extension for 5 years, then there is no, the court was wrong in saying you needed a writing. If what happened was a renewal, then a writing is necessary. If the court says, no, what happened was an extension, but there are legal arguments that can be raised that the court didn't address that you raised in the district court, the court has to go back and analyze that. Well, maybe, okay, it's an extension, but it's still barred by a matter of law because of this, that, or the other thing. Findings we don't have and legal analysis we don't have. Correct me if you think I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think the court found that they extended the occupancy. I don't think there's any finding that there was an agreement for 5 years. I think their conduct ended up being 5 years. In fact, I think it's more than 5 years. I think that's...
That would mean I misread what the... Let me read it again. There was credible testimony from both parties that an oral agreement extended the lease term for an additional 5 years. And that's referring back to 2018. So that happened in 2018, and the court said, no. Whatever the parties agreed to in 2018, even though they did live under this agreement for 5 years, the court is retroactively saying, no. Even back then, you had a month to month. And so we don't have to think about anything else that happened in 2023, because what happened in 2011, what the parties intended to do, didn't really happen. That seems to be what the court's saying. And I was trying to get my mind wrapped around how that's plausible as a matter of law.
I think that the parties were under, I would submit that the parties were operating under, the legal framework under which they were operating, even if they didn't know it, was that of a month-to-month lease. Even if, because in my mind, I think we might both be right about some things here, that extension, if it's automatically 5 years, verbal, I mean, that ended in 2023. Now we're back to the appellant is arguing, well, to respond to another question, well, we have an automatic right of extension, even if it's verbal.
Well, I think what the appellant is saying, if I understand the argument correctly, the appellant is saying what happened in 23 is a repeat of what happened in 2018. The parties again reached an agreement for a five-year extension. That's, I think, the argument. I'm not sure if that holds up as a matter of fact, but the district court didn't find, as a matter of fact, one way or the other, whether it happened.
But I would, and if I may, maybe not to take us too far off that track, I think the court also found that my client, Mr. Osmond, was repeatedly asking for a new written lease to clarify the terms of their relationship. This was, in my client's mind, you know, with all due respect to Mr. Manderfeld, they were getting along. Rent was being paid. No harm, no foul. You know, you're here, you can stay. You know, we won't terminate. Whatever the arrangement was, we're not going to terminate it.
But you're characterizing a fact that we don't have a finding for. We don't have a finding that says what happened in 2023. Well, we know that your client was presenting a written lease. We know that there was opposition to signing a written lease. And we also know that there's an assertion that there was an agreement to extend after whatever discussion happened about the lease. We don't have a finding about whether the parties had an oral agreement to extend the lease term in 2023. We don't have an agreement. We don't have a finding about that.
Yeah.
It seems problematic.
Well, except to the extent that the court does say, even if, you still have to have it in writing.
Right, the court says that because the court thinks it's an amendment.
Yeah, well.
The court doesn't cite any authority for that proposition. Your brief doesn't cite any authority for the proposition that an extension is an amendment. If you look at the plain language of extension clauses and amendment clauses, you could say, hey, look, if you're extending it, that's sort of amending it. That's sort of amending the lease. But there are buckets of case law where there are contracts that include both an amendment has to be in writing provision, mm-hmm. and you can extend the lease without actually having a new written lease. And I don't think it's ever been treated, as far as I know, as an amendment.
May I respond?
Yes, you certainly.
My time is up. I guess in my simple mind, precisely because this lease, there's no language, there's no clarification surrounding this extension, the right to extend term. And I think that is where it becomes compatible with the court's finding that because this is not the typical clearly stated contract terms of what that extension is going to look like, that's what begs the question or requires that it be in writing, because there is no specificity here. There is no clarity here. And again, I'm going to submit to you, I think we're both right. Okay.
So is your argument that, to respond to Judge Ross's argument, that an extension may not be an amendment as long as the terms for the extension are particularly indicated in the lease, as is the tenant will have a right to extend this lease for a period of X years at the same rent? If that's the extension, then it's clear and it's not an amendment. But is your position is that because all it says is, I got to look at the language, all it says is tenants will have the first right to either extend or purchase the premises as the last day of the lease. That's just a right to extend it, but you're saying there still has to be, okay, as to what? You know, what's the monthly rent, how long, et cetera, et cetera.
May I respond?
Yes. Yeah. Well, if he may, Judge Rose.
Yes, may. You may respond to that. Okay, again, just one more reason why you're up there and I'm out here, because I was hoping that my answer to Judge Ross sounded exactly like that, Your Honor. That is it in a nutshell, yes. Which is why I think...
But I mean, and I will just say, speaking for myself, this relation, the whole case is a bit of a dog's breakfast. I mean, you've got a written lease that has specific terms in it as to what the rent is, and then you both parties mutually ignore it and change the rent. And then at some point you come to an oral agreement to, that at least extends for another 5 years. And then at that point, you know, I guess something breaks down and now you're relying on the holdover provision. But the whole point of the holdover, but to say, get out. It's a, this has always been a month to month. Whatever you thought about it, this was a month to month, get out. But then you ignored the exact holdover provision, which says the rent was supposed to double, right? I mean, the lease says if you're holding over in a month to month, the lease the monthly rent doubles. Is that a correct statement?
The lease says that, yes.
Yeah. But that didn't happen either. So now we're left to, you know, what is going on? And it seems like there's an argument that well, whatever the lease says, you people were ignoring it. So then it goes to performance. And then I think appellant maybe has a better argument. Because, I mean, I was astounded that that the lease, the monthly rent was going up when the monthly rent was set at $2,250. And everyone was just going along with that. And now it's kind of like you're pulling the rug from under him. And it's like, oh, well, now let me show you about the merger clause. So why doesn't performance get appellant where he wants to be?
Well, may I?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling so good about Judge Connolly's framing anymore.
No, I think it's still, it hasn't reversed me yet here. I think all those points are well stated, and that is why we have a statute of frauds and why we have a requirement in this lease that should be in writing. The parties pretty much went forward just, without a net, if you will, at great risk to both of them. I mean, I have a note here to bring up that if the roles were reversed, I don't know that we would be very successful in enforcing a balance of a 5-year term if the tenant decided to move out after a year, or if he didn't want to agree to the increased rent, no matter how much they wanted to be friends, you know, if the tenant vacated, he could have said, see ya, wasn't in writing, can't get me. So we're missing a writing here. That's why we're here, because it's not clear and you have a document that required to make it clear. In the absence of making it clear, you can't have, You're proceeding at your own risk if you don't make it clear. That's why it says it's got to be in writing. And if it was written down, we wouldn't be here.
Well, that sums up virtually all of our contract cases.
Good. Well, all right. I don't mean to be too informal with the court. But
that's right. Thank you.
Any further questions? I mean,
I think we're good.
Thank you.
Thank you for your argument. Counsel, any rebuttal?
I think that the court has correctly hit upon the key point that this was an extension, not
What were the terms of the extension?
The extension
in both 2022 and 2023.
They were the same.
Okay.
More years. Five more years term. The parties had a working relationship on agreeing to multiple. Increases in the rent at the request of the respondent. Respondent did not tell the appellant when he leased the place that the city had ordered respondent to pave the lot and to plant bushes and trees. Wasn't in the lease, wasn't described, wasn't discussed, but the appellant agreed to pay half of it. He's a nice man. He's a cooperative tenant, and that's why the court does not need to be concerned about the hypothetical arguments of this thing going forever.
Does the record reflect whether there was a situation where the tenant didn't pay the increased amounts of rents that they agreed to and the landlord tried to enforce that?
Absolutely not. There is no claim that there was ever a non-payment of rent. In fact, there is a situation when the co-tenant moved out in December of 23 after telling our appellant that he'd paid cash, which the respondent insisted upon greenbacks, which he collected in person, no checks, greenbacks. Respondent claimed that the tenant hadn't paid. And since it had been paid in cash, there was no record. So appellant paid half the rent over again. So Our position is he's gone above and beyond the terms of the lease. And that's why, even if we were to engaged in hypotheticals regarding what happens in the future, that there's no reason to be concerned about the situation.
Well, I don't know that issue is even before us. I do think before us, though, is the, or maybe not before us, what should be before us, I think, is a determination by the district court as to what happened in 2023. And I don't, there's no finding about that. And if the, and I don't just mean, did the parties reach an agreement of some type? I think it's necessary to determine, based upon the facts of the case, whether if there was some agreement, as your client is saying, and the district court didn't make any findings on the, whether there was any agreement at all, it seems to me there the next question is going to be, whatever happened, was it a renewal? Assuming you're right that there was this agreement to go forward, was it a renewal as a matter of law, or was it an extension under the law? And so I'm not convinced that you're not, if you prevail here, not simply jumping out of the frying pan into the fire, because that's a, I think it's going to be a tough argument for you to establish that it's anything other than a renewal when you have different terms from the original written document, and the length of time is not specified in the written document. But I don't know, maybe that's a matter for another day. You can tell me if you think I'm wrong about that, and something we should decide.
I think there is things that can be decided here. I think that from the objective actions of the parties, the court can determine that there has been a waiver, regardless of what the lease says. What the parties have done, our view is that this shows a waiver. And throughout the entire agreement.
Well, we're only going back to 2023 now.
2023 was, again, a waiver. If look at the Keene case, where the court said both waiver and election are be determined from the acts of the parties, and therefore, when a lessee who by his lease has an option for an additional term holds over, pays rent, although it be the same amount as the original term, we consider that such acts be more properly referable as an election to avail himself of the option in the lease than holding over.
If the landlord believed that there was another term that was an extension as opposed to a renewal, why did they offer in 2023 tenant a new lease agreement to sign? Isn't that a change in the course of dealing between the parties?
The reason for that, we believe, is because the tenant had a lease that the respondent landlord's realtor knew about and was concerned that a lease with an option to buy and an option to extend would impede the ability to sell the property.
That seems like a decent argument for a finding of fact. But I don't know that that's a basis for a determination of law, that we're supposed to look at and interpret, infer, what was going on in the minds of the parties based upon what they did, when we don't have a finding from the referee or the district court.
Oh, I agree, but I was answering the question from Judge Wheelock, and that's why. We point out that not until the complaint was filed was there ever an assertion in writing by the respondent that this was a month-to-month tenancy relationship. When he tried to terminate the relationship, what did he serve? He served a notice of non-renewal of lease. Doesn't mention month to month. As the court has pointed out, the area of extensions and renewals of law is a little murky. And we would submit that this is an opportunity for the court not only to do justice for the parties in this case, but to help to clarify this area of law that would help everyone. I see I'm out of time.
Thank you. You are out of time. Looks like the panel has no further questions. We appreciate you both coming and engaging in this lively discussion in this interesting case. We appreciate your briefing also and your oral argument. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The matter is submitted. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you. And a good afternoon.
Thank you.